I'm Madeline Walter.
And I'm Ben Axelrad, and we're both hypochondriacs.
I think I'm sick when I'm not.
And anytime I'm sick, I think I'm a goner for sure.
Welcome to Definitely Dying, the podcast about health concerns, both real and imagined.
Because it's better to laugh about it together than cry about it alone.
I have a runny nose and an ingrown hair, and
my knee hurts.
My arms are kind of rash. Is that a rash? And I had Asian food, and that makes me feel kind of sick. I might be lactose intolerant.
Hello, friends and neighbors. How are you? It's me.
How are you?
It's me, Ben. I'll wait for you to answer the question. How are you? How you do? I'm here with
Hello,
Madeline.
Friends and neighbors. How are you?
How are you?
Is how we absolutely must start the podcast for the rest of time.
For the rest of our live long days. How are you?
How are you, everybody? How are you doing?
Madeline, speaking of friends and neighbors,
uh-huh.
I hear you are a bit of a friend to a neighbor this week.
Oh my God.
What a transition. How are you?
How are you?
I apologize.
I am great because I was so well eased into the next part of this conversation by that transition. Thank you so much for that wonderful transition.
I'm your friend and your neighbor.
Oh, my neighbor. Gosh, my elderly neighbor. Birdie, if you're a listener of this podcast, you've heard me talk about her a few times. If you have missed those episodes or you're not an avid listener, I'll catch you up really quickly. I live in some courtyard apartments.
That's the courtyard by Marriott.
Yeah, I live in a courtyard by Marriott.
Sorry.
Everybody's always, it's a lot of turnover, and I cook everything in a microwave.
She makes soup in a jacuzzi tub.
I honestly, that doesn't sound like a thing I wouldn't do.
Yeah, yeah. I thought about it recently.
Throw a can of Campbell's into a hot tub? Fuck yes.
I would even chop up some, I would sit in there, chop up some carrots and some celery and just cook it all around me.
I bet if you put them in a baggie, you could get them hot, and yeah. that wouldn't, the nasty. Well, it's like cooking a fish in the dishwasher.
Oh, yeah. Wait, that's a real thing?
Yes.
People cook fish in the dishwasher?
You can. You can poach a fish in the dishwasher. It seems nasty as hell to me.
What is poaching a fish? I know I've heard of poaching an egg. I wouldn't be able to tell you what.
Like poached salmon, I think. I got to Google it.
Okay,
Zig pulled up a website. I'm a fan of simple home cooking, and this is me reading. I'm not really a fan of simple home cooking. This person on the internet says, I'm a fan of simple home cooking and tend to stick to tried and true cooking methods, but my interest was piqued when I read that you could cook a salmon in a dishwasher. Salmon in a dishwasher? Sounded way too good to be true, and to be honest, a bit of a scary endeavor, but I gave it a whirl. Turns out, cooking salmon in a dishwasher is not a new fad. Bob Bloomer, host of Food Network's The Surreal Gourmet, has been doing it for years, claiming to have cooked salmon in dishwashers around the world.
So it's not just something you can do here in the United States?
No, believe it or not, anywhere in the world with a dishwasher, you can pop a salmon in there and cook it. All you have to do is wrap the salmon tightly in foil, stick the packet in the top rack, and run it on a regular cycle. When the cycle is done, the salmon is cooked and ready to eat. He likens his cooking method to poaching.
Okay.
And yes, wait, this is insane. And yes, you can even add detergent and clean your dishes while you cook your salmon. Ugh. Zig, you're shaking your head, and I agree. I shake my head at that. Just, I don't know. Do
it. Sound good to me.
No.
So okay.
Okay.
Backing up from fishes
yes.
to birdies.
Yes. Back for the fish. Back to fowl.
Yes. Back to fowl. Welcome back to fish or fowl, Madeline. Tell us about birdie.
So I have one of the neighbors in my courtyard apartment complex is this lovely older lady named Birdie, who has in the 7 years that I've lived in my building, her health has declined, and she doesn't have any family in the United States, and she doesn't have a lot of money. So it's one of those situations where it sort of falls on the little help that she has and her neighbors to kind of keep an eye on her. And in a previous episode, I talked about a time that I spent a day with her at Cedars-Sinai Hospital because she needed something. She had a problem with her leg and wanted to go to Cedars instead of.
And very quickly for context, if you don't remember Birdie, maybe you remember her cat Pierce.
Yes, right. Birdie is the mother of Pierce. Sounds like we're describing my sad Game of Thrones life. And there's Birdie, mother of Pierce. And there's the offspring of whom is baby Pierce. Right, yeah. I can't even. It makes me do that. So Birdie, and so I have kind of a complicated relationship with Birdie because she like kind of like pushes, she just sort of inflames my struggle with boundaries and knowing like how responsible I am for people in my life who are not, you know, my direct friends and family. And it's tricky because she's been in the past few weeks, she's been falling a lot. A couple times it's been while I've been home. A few weeks ago at about probably 11 p.m., I noticed an ambulance or the fire department actually. And the fire department was taking her from her house because she had fallen and hit her head. And she was ultimately fine. It wasn't a bad fall. And she has one of those like lifeline buttons or life, you know, one of those, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Buttons, you know, that calls the fire department for these reasons specifically, you know, but she's been using it a lot. Like it's real. Like I think at least 3 or 4 times in the past month, you know, like some form of like the fire department has come to pick her up, bring her to the hospital and bring her home.
I don't mean this dismissively, literally to pick her up. Like she's fallen and she can't get herself off the ground and they have to come and like,
yes,
her legs basically are not working at this point.
So that's sort of it's a whole thing. You know, and so a few days ago I was coming home, you know, because I come home very late often because I do these late improv shows. So I was coming home on Sunday night, probably 12:30 after doing a show at 11, and I noticed a hospital, like, you know, one of those like ambulance transport beds out of her house, outside of her home, and her door was open. And you know, I try to poke my head in every time something like that is going on. Cause like one time they didn't know where her little like purse was, where she has all her stuff. And I was able to like give them her purse and like, just, it feels like, why not? And so I poked my head in and it was just 2 EMTs and they were putting her back in her bed cause she had fallen earlier, gone to the hospital, was fine. And they brought her back and they were like, I was like, everything okay? And they're like, are you her caretaker? And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm like a neighbor. And they were like, oh, well, do you know how we could get her some food? She was saying she's really hungry. And they didn't feed her at Hollywood Presbyterian, which is the sort of creepy hospital that they take her to. And
and me.
We went to Hollywood Presbyterian. We know firsthand. We won't get into it.
No. I'm sure
Hollywood Presbyterian is where that crackhead called you fat.
Right. That's your memory of that. I forgot that was how you remember that day.
The day that the crackhead called you fat.
Yeah, it's like, that's the documentary about my life.
It was so rude.
I know. Especially for a crackhead.
Also, it was crazy.
You know what? Before you start casting aspersions, why don't you keep both your shoes, buddy?
Yeah.
That's what I remember, is he didn't have both of his shoes.
No, because he had thrown his shoe at a person who was chasing him.
You know what? Look, folks, you're not getting any more context than that. That's all you need to know, is that's the crackhead that called me fat threw his shoe at another person.
While climbing over a fence.
Yeah.
So you know, the only thing you do in that situation is like, I was like, great, I'll do it. That's fine. And so I had a not unpleasant hour, you know, like getting, I didn't know what to get for her because she has kind of particular dietary like she's a vegetarian. Okay. She, you know, she was like, you can go get me a pizza. And but I like she was kind of confused. So I was like, it's 12:30. And she was like, oh. And then I realized I had some like vegetable lentil soup up at my house. So I kind of ran up to my house, you know, made her some soup, offered her some white bread, which she declined because she doesn't eat white flour.
Okay. Birdie.
I mean, she's actually pretty healthy.
Yeah. She's so Hollywood.
Yeah. She's very Hollywood. I think I did say when we were, when I was taking her to the hospital, like a few months back, she just out of nowhere in the car, she looked at a guy jogging and said, good, he's too fat.
Oh, Jesus.
She's also told me, yeah, I mean, she's told me on a couple occasions that I need to tighten it up a little.
Oh, Jesus.
She can sometimes be very mean to me.
So she's like Hollywood in both the good ways and the bad ways.
She's given me a couple of digs at my appearance that have stuck with me and stuff. But none of that behavior stopped me from making her a can of soup at midnight. And she was super thankful. And honestly, I really don't think it's that big of a deal, you know, because I think it's just kind of like what neighbor, like, the, you know, that is sort of like what a neighbor should do.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, not like I work very hard. Like I very deliberately like don't check on her every time I pass her house. Like I'm trying to sort of take us at an appropriate distance, because the very tricky thing about the situation is that like there's a very distinct possibility that she's like not, it's just that funny kind of ongoing question of like, should she be living alone? And the answer is no, but also the question of whose responsibility it would be to make a decision for her that she doesn't want to. Like, it's the kind of thing that if she were my grandma, you know, I would go through I would fight her tooth and nail to get her in a facility. But because nobody has the relationship to her where they are authorized or appropriately responsible to make that decision, it's just tough.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still an adult, and she still has, you know, has agency over her decision. So it's just an interesting, you know, not to like go on forever, but it's an interesting boundaries exercise for me.
Definitely. I think even if it is a grandmother, I mean, those facilities are a death sentence.
Yes.
And it's not saying that you're going to die immediately. Often you will live a little bit longer than if you didn't.
Yes,
but it is a death sentence.
Maybe live miserably. Yeah. And, you know, and so it's just that it's kind of a version of what I've heard so many people go through in their own lives, you know, with the elderly people in their lives, which is just, you know, do you let someone live a riskier existence that they prefer, or a less risky and less preferable existence? And in this case, it's, you know, it doesn't matter what
right,
I think.
Yeah. And I think probably the first one feels, obviously, you want people to live as long as possible, but like I think, like you said, like the idea of taking agency away from anybody does sort of feel like it's not their life any longer.
And so, anybody who you don't know deeply, like, you know, it's such a complicated decision to make that I need to like basically where it starts and ends with her is like this was the perfect task for me because it was an isolated incident.
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy to go in and like feed someone who needs a little help making some soup, you know, and then that needs to be the extent of like you be a good neighbor, not a surrogate granddaughter.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think every story you've told, I think you made the right decision.
Thank you.
And that's not just about Birdie. Yeah. That's every story you've ever told. And I guess the only thing left I have to ask is, friend, neighbor, how are you? Sorry.
I'm ready to start the podcast.
Yeah, me too. Guys, we have a great, great guest for you today. We're so excited to have her. She's one of our favorite people. Why? She's so damn nice.
Oh, my God.
That's one. Two. So damn talented.
Oh, my God.
That's number two. Three, just a special, special lady. Three, that's number three. Number four, just great in every way. Where do you know her from? You know her from DC Superhero Girls, where she voices the character Supergirl. She's a part of the awesome sketch team Private Street, who hosts the new show. She also hosts Characters Welcome. She's been all over the theater. Everybody loves her. Everybody knows her. Usually people reverse those. They say the no part first and the love part second. In this case, people found out they loved her and then they got to know her. She's just that great. Annie's Fairweather.
Wow.
I've gotten better. I've gotten better at them, right?
Intro.
I've gotten better
at them. That was amazing. Yeah, such a good intro.
I've gotten better.
I feel so loved.
You are so loved.
You are. I didn't already feel loved the moment I walked in here. You guys, I'm never leaving.
Please,
I'm
going to
be part of this podcast forever. I'm just going to show up every time.
Honestly, please. It would be a delight.
Oh my God.
I think it actually would be too much niceness in one room for anybody else who was here.
Everyone's disgusted. Ratings are going to plummet. They're just like, no.
Suck it. Because we want to be this nice.
Yeah, suck it.
We're going to love each other.
Honestly, just
I think I want to tell people to suck it more often.
Yeah, I think you should.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's very specific.
It is.
Yeah.
Right? And I feel like it trumps people. Oh, God, I hate that word.
Oh, yeah.
People just stop.
Yeah.
Like, you know, suck
like,
it.
You know
then
what?
How do you come back to that?
You can suck it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd be like,
I'm gonna go suck it.
Okay. We done?
Yeah. I guess we are.
God, we've never seen more smiley people saying suck.
Well, let's ask you the question we always like to start with. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think about death?
10.
10.
12.
12.
20.
20.
I genuinely think I'm being 100% honest about this. And I'm not just doing this because I'm on this podcast.
Sure, sure.
I think about death. I feel it's a scary amount. I think about dying more than living, I feel. And that
really?
Is like, and I'm not doing a bit. Like,
I think
about death all the time.
Okay.
All the time. Wake up in the morning and I'm like almost surprised that I'm still alive because in my dreams, I have night terrors.
Oh,
in my dreams, I've dreamt that I've died 3 times.
Whoa. Every night.
Almost every night.
Can you tell us about it?
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Well, they're always revolving around the same sort of thing. Now, mind you, because I had 2 psychoanalysts for parents, which we sort of talked about before we started recording. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I have been taught to talk about my dreams constantly.
Really?
Remember them very well. So I have a lot of power in my dreams. What do they call it? Like,
lucid dreaming?
Lucid dreams.
Yes.
So I can like be like, oh my God, I'm dreaming, you know, in my dreams. And then I do things like, I'm going to have an ice cream sundae. And then like in my friends in my dream are like, whoa, you know? Or I'll be like, oh my God, we're in a dream together. And I'll think the other person's having a lucid dream in my dream as
well.
Oh my
gosh.
Whoa. And then we travel through the dream together. It's very fun.
Yeah.
But there are also ways that I have lucid dreaming where I'll be like in a cafe and it feels very, very real, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ordering
yes.
my Starbucks because I'm disgusting. I don't do like the fancy places. I'm like Starbucks. I'm not helping this world at all. It's horrible. And then I think about how I'm going to die because this country's going to turn into a landfill.
Yeah.
This world is going to be, you know, just a bunch of Starbucks cups.
Yeah.
But I still order it. And drink it and hate myself the whole time. But I'll have a dream where I'm in a Starbucks and it feels very, very, very real.
Yes.
And then I'll be like, am I dreaming? Is someone going to come in here? And I hate to say it because it's, you know, there's so much gun violence in the world right now. But I'm like, someone's going to come up here and shoot the place up.
Eek.
And then in comes somebody with a gun and shoots me and kills me.
Eek.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And you actually die.
Almost
like,
every night.
You,
almost.
Get, you take the bullet.
Take the bullets.
You can feel the last breaths leaving your body. You're dead.
Holy
I'm shit.
Dead. It's very strange, but it's also there are times that I see it happening.
Yeah.
And then I know that if I open my eyes really wide, I'll be out of it.
Like you'll wake
and
up
I'll wake
in
up.
Real in the
Yes.
Whoa.
Isn't that crazy?
That's
that is
crazy.
Crazy.
Have you had that? Have you had those since you were a kid?
Yes, I've had very lucid dreams since I was a kid. So there was one time that my brother and I had the same dream in the same night.
Stop.
And we're like almost in each other's dreams.
What?
And I feel like when I say that out loud, I almost don't believe myself.
Yeah.
But it happened because we were having cereal the next day. It might have actually been like 2 or 3 days later. And I started telling my mom my dream because she always wanted to know our dreams.
Oh.
Which is also very personal. Like if you share dreams like I'm doing right now, people can think, like, you can read somebody.
Sure,
like,
sure.
I love dream analysis. Like, I will analyze anybody's dream.
Really?
Yes, I live for it.
Oh, my gosh.
I have friends call me up, text message me, long paragraphs of a dream, and I feel, analyze it very well. And I also feel like I can I can tell you what's wrong with you.
I want to do one after we talk about this.
Okay, I would love that.
Same.
Because I always have the same dreams and they're horrifying and I would like to know why. Yeah.
Usually it's about birth.
Oh, like my me
your
being born?
Your experience being born.
Really?
A lot of reoccurring dreams are. But reoccurring dreams, so I have a lot of reoccurring dreams, and they're very important to dissect. They're very important to, and they're important to talk about, because it's also very important the words you use while you're describing your dream. Never edit yourself. It's like the morning pages, you know, artist way. Never edit yourself. So when you're talking about your dreams, it's really important. The words you use are very hefty, like they mean a lot.
Like don't search for, if you think it's the wrong word, don't search for what you think is the right one. The wrong one was the right one.
Yes.
And there's a reason you're compelled to say it.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
It's your unconscious mind and your conscious mind meeting.
Yeah. Is that what dreaming is?
Yeah, it's all of the repressed emotions throughout the day. Yeah. I mean, listen, you guys, my husband calls me Dr. Fairweather because I'll be like, I know everything. No, I didn't go to school for medicine or for any of this. I studied journalism and sociology because I thought I was going to talk about news on TV.
We've gotten 80 episodes of a podcast out of zero medical knowledge whatsoever.
Yeah, we don't know a damn thing.
We wouldn't let you in that seat if you knew a lot more than we do. We want that little smidge that'll allow us to feel like we're smarter than the next person who sits in that seat. Yeah.
Very good at self-diagnosis and diagnosing others, which really is irritating for me. Stop it. Dr. Fairweather is what he calls me, but it's not... He's not being honest. He's being 100% sorry. So my brother and I had this dream, and I was telling my mom my dream, and it was that my brother and I would go to this like 7-Eleven. It wasn't 7-Eleven. It was a Save-On down the street, and we'd walk there a lot when we were growing up. And my dad had this old Mazda that he wanted to get it painted like cream, but he got it painted yellow, bright yellow, and brought it home. My mom was not pleased. But we had this dream that my brother and I were riding bicycles to go to the Save On Drugs to get candy, which is what we like to do. And this car, the Mazda, started chasing us.
Whoa.
And he was like following us and chasing us, but there was no one driving the car.
Oh my gosh.
And we were like going under these underpasses. Felt very much like E.T., but this car was trying to kill us.
Yikes.
And there was no one behind the passenger, or no one behind the driver. I know I just repeated myself, but I wanted to make sure you guys got how spooky this was.
Yes. That's so spooky.
So as I start telling my mom the dream, my brother starts finishing it. And I'm like, I didn't tell you that. And he's like, I had this dream. This was my dream that I had. And I was like, this was my dream that I had.
No.
You know, we arguing.
That's like the craziest sibling rivalry I've ever heard. It was my dream.
I had that dream.
It was my dream.
It's my dream. I had it.
Mom! He stole my dream again.
And then mom's like, I'm a psychoanalyst. This is my design. I've been waiting for this moment for years.
There never was a brother.
God. Oh my God. This is why I was so weird growing up. I'm realizing it now.
Is he your younger or older brother?
Older brother. Three years older. Yeah.
And is that your only sibling?
Only sibling. Okay. Well, so I had interesting, not only were both my parents psychoanalysts growing up, and not only were we arguing over who stole each other's dream, but my dad was 64 years old when I was born.
Okay.
Oh.
So my dad was born in 1919, so he was 30 years older than my mom.
Oh, geez.
So he did have two kids before he met my mom. So a half brother and a half sister, who were almost my mom's age.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so that was... That was a lot to unpack in Orange County.
Yeah.
You know? Like, ugh. I feel like a crazy person.
That is a great name for a show. A lot to unpack in Orange County. By Anna East Fairweather. Yeah. It really would be a very good show.
A
show about two psychoanalyst parents or whatever. And
my God. And all the repressed emotions that happen in Orange County.
Yes.
Go into any hair salon in Orange County and just look at those women. They are very medicated, most of them, and just trying to make themselves happy with their hair, with their highlights. It's a sad place.
Yeah. Was your house an anomaly, or was there also a lot of repression in your house?
Yeah, no, I think it was. I think it was so I think on the outside it looked so strange to people.
Yeah.
But on the inside it was so healthy. Because even though there was a lot of stuff, like we're, you know, talking about death and everything with this podcast, like, you know, there was a looming death. And so what I realized that analyzing, I don't know if I've ever analyzed this dream before with my brother and I, I analyzed it as I was saying it to you today. That my dad's death was always chasing us.
Oh, because he had just because of his age?
Wow.
Yeah, well, my dad, so when I was born, he had a congenital, like, heart disease. He had a lot of heart problems.
Oh, okay, okay.
So he flew in D-Day. He was a fighter pilot. He was, like, amazing.
Yeah.
So flying in the planes at that point, there wasn't the apparatuses, I guess you'd say, that would help anybody, you know, breathe well. And he had really poor, he had really bad asthma. So he was taking prednisone his whole life, which helps thin your blood, it's like a
steroid.
Steroid, thank you. And so by the time I was born, he was taking like 10 prednisone a day.
Those make you crazy too.
He was very thin, which it also thins the skin and like the tissue in your heart.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of heart problems. So when I was born, he was like in a bed as well, like in the hospital, possibly dying.
So you came into this world while almost losing a parent.
Yes.
At the same moment.
At the same time. Yeah. It was so it was a pretty intense situation. Like he, you know, we have to call 911 a lot and he'd have to go on a stretcher. Like not to be such a downer, because I think that there's I've dealt with this stuff in therapy, so I can talk about it.
Yes.
And not just with my mother, but like with an actual therapist outside of the house. Although my mom does, I do call her on the daily and I'm like, I feel fucked up today. So there was a lot of like looming death, and my brother and I were very, very close growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that dream, you know, it was like we had each other and we were both riding together trying to save ourselves from this death like looming in the air. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially if it's a congenital thing, that means that it is sort of chasing you, right?
Yeah, like exactly.
And then your father eventually did
that? Yeah, when I was 13. Like in junior high, which is, you know, the worst time for anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
On
what
this
was
planet.
That? Yeah, what was that like?
It was interesting. So my mom was like recently had said this to me, and I was like, yeah, we talked about it more recently, like maybe like a year ago, that people had said, your kids really came out of their shell. And they're like, I don't mean to sound this make this seem insensitive, but your kids really came out of their shell when Paul passed away. And it's true, you know, like because it was so looming, it was like, you know, this death was in the air.
Yeah.
I always was, we were just trying to keep him alive as long as possible. So a lot of our own personal needs kind of like went to the wayside. Like I felt very guilty for, I deal with guilt a lot.
Yes.
And I feel like I felt very guilty ever needing anything that was like, I want new clothes for school, or like, you know, the other kids down the street in Orange County, like, you know, some of my friends like never repeated outfits to school. Like
oh
it was
gosh.
Very rich, you know,
yes.
and the money was being spent in ways that like my family wasn't spending money. My family was like spending money in ways to sort of like a lot of medical bills and stuff.
Yeah.
But they did well. I mean, like, you know, they were both doctors, so it's not like I have anything to complain about. But because of that, I think that when he did pass, there was a part of me. I remember a part of me thinking, like, nothing is ever going to be the same in a sad way, but also, like, a happy way. Because I was like, finally, I can sort of put this chapter behind me and maybe I can step into my own a little bit more.
Yes.
I mean, like, I didn't really dissect it that much, but I remember thinking like nothing is ever going to be the same. And it wasn't all of a negative feeling, which I felt guilty about later too. But.
You had an experience that so many people don't have until like after their 50s, you know, like, cause like what you're describing feels to me like what I've heard, like, you know, even like, or what I've observed with like my parents losing my grandparents, like it is this like monumental shift in the way that you like see your life and your role. And also like, I feel like many people like are a caretaker for their parents, but like, but again, you were 13 experiencing something that so many people like have to experience and process after they've lived their whole life.
And that is always so surprising to me when like people my age are like, oh my, you're both, your parents are still alive.
Yeah.
That right, I'm right. like, I'm like, whoa. And then when people are like talking about grandparents, I'm like so, so shocked because, yeah. you know, my dad was much older. So like his parents, well, my grandma was like senile when I met her yeah. and she kept asking the same three questions, which this is my dad's mom.
Yeah.
And my dad was like 70 at this time. And she's like, who's that old man with that young woman? And then I asked her for water, and she gave me, she took the flowers out of this vase and then handed me the vase. I was like, nah,
that
I'm
is
good.
Like how you would write like a senile person in a script, and I'd be like, that's
crazy.
Yeah. yeah.
That's how you'd write me on a first date. I take the flowers out and hand someone a water vase. You're pretty. You want vase?
I know.
So do you have grandparents at this point?
No, not even close. Long time ago. But it feels like when I see, like, for instance, my husband Kaz, when we go and visit his parents, you know, they're so healthy and like they're carrying things, you know, like heavy boxes. Right. And I'm like, how are you carrying that thing? And it's like, then they, you know, there's a moment where I can kind of see like my mother-in-law be like, don't treat me like I'm old, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
But I've been carrying like the Christmas tree forever. So my mom also had like arthritis growing up and she's had two hip replacements. Like both of them have been redone.
Wow.
I grew up with like a great, mommy's, like mommy's yeah. raised me. And then... Have you ever seen Tomb Raider? Yeah. That was my house.
There's a couple of dusty mummies just trying to tell you what your dreams mean.
I love the idea of like a Tomb Raider babies, like the Muppet Babies equivalent. Yeah. Just a little mummy.
My brother and I just riding our bikes like, oh God, hopefully we survive this.
The car's back.
Yeah. But that's totally how it felt. Like, it really did feel like surviving. And I
sure.
think I definitely, you know, I stopped going to therapy like 2 years ago, but I was going like three times a week for a while. So I was like, I think I'm good for a while. Yeah. But it is definitely, I think the reason why I think about death so much is because there was so much of it around me mm-hmm. that I was constantly processing it.
Yeah.
So I feel like, how am I, there is this thought, and I have to be careful because I do feel like there is power in like the way we think and operate, but like, and which freaks me yeah. out more. Like, I'm going to die yeah. because I'm thinking about it too yeah. much. But I think there's a part of me that is surprised that I'm still alive.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
And just because of all of the death that you experienced. So, or, yeah, like I mean, you sort of experienced death as a normal part yeah. of life.
Yeah. But I sound like such an idiot at the same time. And because, you know, I'm like talking about, when I tell people, like, yeah, I grew up in Orange County, they immediately have an opinion about who I must be because
yes.
of what Orange County
yes.
is.
Yes.
But I feel like my experience was so different than that I just am like, well, whatever. People can think what they want.
Yeah.
But it feels crazy even to be taught. And it's crazy to talk like this, to be like, I grew up with a lot of death. My dad died when I was 13.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, get over yourself, you know? So, but that there's that. But I
yeah.
do think that's part of why I think about it so
yeah.
much.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, the dying at 13 part isn't really what registered with me. It was the part where you said that you were basically born into an environment where death was looming. That means like for the first 13 years of your life, it was always imminent. And then at age 13, I think it explains why you had the reaction that you had where, I mean, I think we all do. My mom has MS and she's been very sick for like 25 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, it's probably going to overtake her. I mean, it won't be MS exactly, but she'll get something mm-hmm. else and her immune system won't be able to fight it off.
Ugh.
And it will be a very sad moment. But also, my mom has suffered a decent amount in
yeah.
her life and it won't be sad. It's never sad to wish a lack of suffering or lesser suffering on anyone else. And sometimes that's going to have more permanent lasting implications. And we can't hate ourselves for wanting both. We can't hate ourselves for wanting everyone to live, but also everyone to live happily, you know?
Yeah.
And And so when those two collide and only one is going to prevail, it's natural to have those feelings. And especially if you're a caring and compassionate person like you are. I don't know if anyone listened to the intro that I gave. This is a very nice and sweet person. I'll go back and do it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do it again. No, text me at something.
It makes sense to have both feelings and to obviously to feel a little bit of remorse and guilt about the feelings. But I honestly think if you didn't have both of those feelings, it would mean that one cylinder wasn't firing or whatever. Yeah.
That is so nice. Thank you so much for wow. It does make me feel so much better. Yeah, you're right. I was brought into this world where I was like, okay,
you had to think about it all the time. Yeah. So it would be almost unnatural for you to not have it be at least a part of your consideration. It's not like necessarily going to be at the forefront of your mind, but it's lingering in the back that the death is present at all times, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, especially just like, there are a million opportunities, remove any of the congenital stuff, remove disease and sickness. There are a million opportunities to die on a regular basis, you know, and especially in this day and age where, like you were talking about earlier, people show up with guns places and how does one, all right, this is getting too depressing. We're in the shadow of death at all times. Yes.
I mean, it's so interesting. It's amazing that these species that have these amazing brains wake up every day and forget that we could die that day.
Yes.
And we go on about our day and we care about things that are so silly, even though we know we're going to die. It's we forget about it, like this veil that exists that keeps us from that knowledge.
Yeah.
It's so interesting. And we're remarkable for being that way, for living with that sort of hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, do you have a lot of fear of death? So you think about it a lot. Are you fearful?
Fear. Yeah. Because I don't, even though I'm surprised I'm still alive, I feel like this is like my therapist is like, you don't need to come in for another 5 years after this podcast. I feel, I'll pay you guys at the end.
We do a sliding scale. Yeah. We take copay.
Venmo, you guys take Venmo? I have a lot of money on Venmo right now, which I'm worried it's going to, somehow the government's going to take that away from me, right?
Right.
I don't know. Soon as I get paid on Venmo, I put it in my bank account right away.
Yeah.
Leave it on
I just
Venmo.
Leave it on what? There.
Why?
I transfer all mine to Bitcoin.
That's smart.
I don't actually know what a Bitcoin is.
We should just have a safe in our house and put money in there because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
But I feel like, oh my God, what was I even saying?
Oh, fear. Like, fear, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Fear
are you
of
fearful?
Death.
Yeah.
Yes. Even though I'm still surprised I'm alive today, I am absolutely terrified of dying. Like, I do not want to die.
Yeah.
I want to live. I don't want to live forever, but like I just don't want to die.
Yeah.
I'm so scared
fun.
Of dying.
Yeah. Oh, you're
cuz life is great.
Yeah.
Like it's great to be alive.
Right.
You know, and like even when things are horrible, it's like none of us want to die, which is amazing. I mean, there are some people who want to die.
Yeah.
Right. What would be the worst? Like as you worst way to go?
Okay.
Like I mean, so we can start sort of categorically,
like
murder versus accident versus long-term sickness versus like all of a sudden kind
of. Well, here's and maybe this will add some levity to this deep conversation, but this is honest. I am so scared I'm going to die in a very stupid way.
Me too.
Yeah, really? Yeah.
Just absent-minded. Yeah. Like, yes.
Yes, I feel like because I am a very, I feel like at my core, I'm just like a disgusting person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Behind closed doors, I just feel like, is anybody else doing what I'm doing? Which is like, when Kaz leaves for like a day, he's like, is it chill if I go and I'm like, get out of here. I get a day by myself. I get to like be alone for a day and a night. Oh, alone to be disgusting. It's like I'll order, you know, eat 24 alone and just like eat everything. I'll watch like the shittiest reality shows and just like eat it up. I just am so scared that like I'm going to eat like a chicken wing that like was ordered from a pizza place. It doesn't even make chicken wings, you know, and they're like not right. They're like slimy.
They're like
and
a little just like tastes like a little
undercooked.
Yes.
Right? Like the skin hasn't gotten crispy.
Yep.
The ones you can't kind of hold. Like
they
literally slide
so
out of your finger.
Yeah, you can see almost like the duck feather or the chicken feather. Yeah. Like duck feathers. I know a lot.
You ordered chicken wings with duck feathers from a pizza place.
From a pizza place. That makes sense. I would believe it. Yeah. Wait, have you seen these things? They're disgusting. You know, you feel like I'm going to like, he's going to come home and see me with like a chicken wing down my throat, just blue in my old disgusting robe with like a Scientology documentary on like repeat because I must know everything about Scientology.
The Netflix Are You Still Watching appears on the screen as you're blue with a chicken wing down your throat.
I'm like, always I'm so
trying to still watch.
I'm so scared when people want to come over and they're like, well, let's just like go on your Netflix. I'm like, no, no, no. Recently watched, please, dear God. Yeah. Far too telling.
Why don't we scroll my search history instead? That'll be less embarrassing for me.
I'd rather have someone check out my phone and like see a U-porn show up than like see my Netflix. Absolutely disgusting. So I'm really scared of dying that way.
Yeah.
So I feel like I should have a contract with somebody that if they discover my body, they call a number.
Yeah.
That number is like one of the best writers on the planet, like a real good science fiction writer. Yeah. And they could come up with my obituary.
Oh, nice.
Because that is the only way I'm going to get out of this. Because I feel certain I'm going to die in a very dumb way. You know?
Like,
those things live forever.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
They live forever. Yes. Mm-hmm. People are like, oh my God, you hear? And like, they can't cry because they are immediately interrupted by laughter.
Yes.
And thinking about how dumb your death was.
Yes.
It's so much work to live.
Yeah.
And then to go out in a dumb way just feels like such a waste of a whole life.
I want to go out in a silly way.
You do?
Yes, because
Tell me everything, Madeline. I need to hear this.
I would love for people like at my funeral to be like, wasn't this silly? Like, I feel like that's like so, like I've said this before, I think on this podcast, like I want like just to have like a pizza party and I
totally
would love to like just like die in a stupid way.
Let me hear the stupidest way you'd be okay going out.
I think like maybe like,
like, would you be okay with a chicken wing in your throat?
Yes.
Really? Because it's
I envy you.
Not that, because I
would be fine with it. What would make me crazy would be dying in a moment of small irresponsibility.
Yeah.
Like, if I cooked some chicken and failed to cook it properly because if it was an honest mistake, then that's fine. But if it was because I was like in a rush and was like, this is probably fine. I'm like, I'm like late. I didn't give myself enough time to like get to my show. So I'm going to try to cook this fast. Like, you know, but basically I am terrified of dying in a way that is my fault because of like the small bad ways I live my life, which are like always running late, cramming a little too much in all the time. If that is one of the reasons that I die, or a moment of like true carelessness, that's what would make me crazy. Yeah.
But I think of that as that's what the chicken wing is to me.
Exactly.
I feel like it's just like the idea that like there would be there would be these bones that were stuck in your throat and you'd be like,
why did I order E24?
I should have
to me that's like dying having a nice life. I think that's dying doing like a fun thing you wanted to do.
Then that's a perspective thing, right? Because if I died on ordering E24, I would 100% blame myself in the moment.
Yeah, this is just evidence that you don't let yourself have fun things.
No,
you eating chicken wings while Kaz was out of town for one fucking day. In your case, it's Ben.
The biggest fantasy of my life is just sitting down. And ordering food and watching a like reality show. And I never do it's crazy because I'll be like, I'm going to do it. Like, because Ben will be out of town and I'll be like, oh, you know what I'm going to do tonight? I did it on this past Friday. Ben was out with a friend and like, I was like, going to make plans. I was like, no, I'm going to like come home. I'm going to order pizza and I'm going to watch like the Great British Baking Show.
So if you this goes out to both of you, if you knew the day that you were going to die,
yeah.
What things would you do on that day? Would you do the things that seem like the most fun day, or would you get as much stuff out of the way that felt like you're never going to have another opportunity to do it again?
That's a great question. Okay, am I dying like late at night in my sleep?
Yeah, you're going to, like, at midnight that night, you're going to lay down, you close your eyes, you're gone forever. How do you spend the rest? Is it going to be a fun day?
Have we already said all of our, like, goodbyes?
Yeah, we'll just assume that, like, we'll assume that you sent out one email and that everyone appreciated that. Like, that it wasn't a dicky move like you would expect.
All of, like, the loose ends have been tied up?
Basically, no, not all the loose ends have been tied up, but you're in a good place with everyone that you care about. Everyone has accepted that this is your last day. You've accepted that this is your last day. In terms of the relationships in your life, it's more about the piddly shit. Like, it's all the stuff that actually does, you know, consume your mind up until you go to bed. Are you able to do that, or are you able to have super
that
Madeline fun day?
Such an interesting question because of the way that it's phrased. If it was just like the way that you originally phrased it before Madeline put in, is anyone going to be mad at me?
That is what you did.
Or is anyone going to be sad at me?
So if it was just like, I didn't know I was going to die, but how would you want to spend your last day and without really knowing you're going to die? Just what seems like the most fun day you could possibly have? 100% going to Disneyland and probably just with Gauze. So that I I say that, but I want him to behave the way I want him to behave. Okay? So in my mind's eye, I want him to behave the way I want in order to go to Disneyland and have the day I am imagining, okay? Yeah. It's not going to be that if he behaves the way he wants to. He's going to be complaining about lines and how it's hot and how, you know, there's garbage everywhere and how Americans are just so wasteful. I don't want any of that in this day.
No.
This dream day.
No.
But if I know it's my last day and my family knows, I'm going to end up doing something I don't want to do.
Yeah, you're going to end up, like, having a big old party
taking care
with
of
everyone
everybody,
you know, and then, like, relating, having to have, like, a nice conversation with
eating
everybody.
Eating spaghetti squash and checking up on emails, which is basically that.
Yeah.
You got to close all those tabs on your death day. That's what I say. Close
even
down those tabs.
Have something crazy that I, like, if I don't know that I'm going to die, this sounds crazy, but, like, I actually wouldn't even mind just having a regular day. Like there's something, like, just like the routines of, like I don't mind the tasks in my life. Like, I get a great deal of pleasure through, like,
you don't have pleasure in your life. You have love. You have a great relationship. You do not have simple pleasure in your life.
I do. I love my oatmeal.
You're embarrassing yourself.
Oatmeal.
You are embarrassing yourself right now.
I can't tell if you're being honest or if you're trying to make yourself believe this. That this is true.
Madeline woke up knowing she was going to die, made that oatmeal she made every other day. It is great, like, oatmeal, and we, like, have this amazing peanut butter.
She argued on that one episode that she loved it, so no one feels sorry for her. I know it seems sad.
That's Madeline's TV show. I know it seems sad.
If I know I'm going to die and I've done all my business, then, like, Disneyland with Ben, like, that type of day is exactly what I would do. But then, like, in the scenario where I'm just I just wouldn't mind dying at the end of a day where I, like, get up and, like, do my little yoga video and I eat my little oatmeal. And then I, like, you know, like, go, like, you know, do, I don't know. I like to lunch with Ben, like, have a little walk, like.
As her voice shakes,
I'm considering killing you now.
Your chicken ring is sounding pretty good right now.
Yeah.
I'm scared you're gonna die on Spaghetti Squash on Saturday.
It's like a Wednesday.
No, that's
Saturday.
I think the perfect description of how I live my life is, like, my fun Saturday is most people's fine Wednesday.
Well, it's been a fine Wednesday. I'm gonna close these eyes for
Go to Bed Bath and Beyond. get one thing, but then I know what it is.
The day.
So I feel like, oh, I need a new pillow. Ben and I will go to Bed Bath & Beyond and pick out a pillow. It'll be nice.
The day you lay down in your bed and go to the Beyond, you also want to go to Bed Bath & Beyond.
I want to wake up. I want to do yoga. I want to eat oatmeal. I want to go to Bed Bath & Beyond with Ben.
Oh,
I want to get lunch.
God.
And all jokes aside, what you basically are saying is that you enjoy your life and that, like, you're not looking, you don't need it to be the most special day on, yeah. Like you've created it's,
or even
it's,
a kind of special day.
Yeah, even slightly special.
Yeah, you're okay
one,
with
you could argue one that was even good. You could argue that you don't even need a good day.
Just a lukewarm, yeah. Really moderate.
Well, I feel like a good day because if I know I'm going to die, I won't be preoccupied with all of the little tasks. I won't be like, I need to write a web
the
series.
Freedom.
I need
freedom.
Yeah.
Just like to know, like, oh, I can just focus on these I love something mundane when I don't feel it's putting off something else. You know, like
I know
what
you're talking
to just
about.
Go through the mundane motions of a day when those are the only things I actually have to do.
I love that. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'm going to throw in a slight wrinkle, Madeline, and also Annalise. You'll answer this as well. And you know, within the context of your perspective.
I'm sorry that we haven't asked you, but
okay. I'm barely alive.
What?
No.
You have to answer.
Every day I die.
You have to answer.
Every day.
Every day I die a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Everybody.
Okay. I die a little bit. More than the average person. I want to be special.
Okay, he gets to die a little bit more. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my thing I think would be, and I think this does not answer the question that I posed to you guys, so it's unfair, but I think I would need like a nice combination of things. Like I would need to do something that I had been putting off doing for a long time, like that seemed like a fun thing, not like skydiving, but that equivalent kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like one thing that I hadn't done already. Yeah. One thing.
A bucket list type
thing. One bucket list type thing. One thing that felt like, okay, this is something I've loved doing for my entire life. One thing that I currently love doing, like Annalise, for instance, we've talked about going to ramen. Like ramen is like, it's not my current obsession food, but whatever my obsession food was that day, I would eat it for lunch.
Yes. Yes.
And then whatever my all-time favorite food was, I would eat it for dinner. Yeah. So basically, I'm dying of overeating.
No, I would definitely, my meal, I like pizza and a burger.
But now it's
here's the
wrinkle that I'm going to pose. Okay, this is for both of you. So now let's assume that a great creative project, not necessarily your opus, but something that you cared a lot about, was near completion on the day. You find out at the beginning of that day, this is the day that you're going to die. If you put in 2 days worth of work in this one day, you could complete this thing that maybe in your mind would be a legacy, or you just put it off because you're dying anyway. Which one would you do?
I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it.
Mm-mm.
Does it matter?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking you.
Like most of, like, I feel like all the work I do is kind of for me, like, you know,
but could you leave something unfinished that you cared about?
I 100% could.
That's good.
Because I just feel like, and here's the thing, because I would want to experience the day for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And the last day on Earth for my own experience on this planet. And then because everything else, like, you know, my dad wrote 3 books and, like, I haven't read one of them, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I will read his cards or I'll, like, you know, look at pictures or whatever. Yeah. So I sort of feel like, and plus I have nothing in the works that is worthwhile. I hope somehow, you know, all my YouTube videos, most of them just go to the wasteland. they are never viewed, you know. I just don't want that. But
yeah,
I think makes me wonder about my, you know, a little bit about like what I am actually pursuing. Well, because
that's interesting. Yeah, because nothing I'm working on now is worth me spending my last day on Earth finishing it. But I hope by the time, okay, so I hope I die old. And I do hope by that time that I would be doing, like, my whole, like, dream for the evolution of the work that I do is like I want to be doing what I'm doing now, right now. And when I'm old and have, like, more things that I know that matter, I hope I'm working on something that I would want to spend my dying days finishing.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be my, and if that's the case, then for sure, because like, because again, in a world where I've like, see, you know, like in a world where I've spent all of the time with all of the people, like, you know, like barring like mm-hmm. getting more time with the people in my life, like right. I get so like, there's no, I feel like there's very little, I get so much pleasure out of like doing work that I think matters. Yeah, yeah. Which I, much of the time, you know, I'm like always like, does this matter? But like having that sense of purpose is like so much nicer to me than like seeing a cool flower, going right. to the beach, or like
yeah.
going to a night, like going to a place that I like. Like do like my the thing that makes me feel the most excited about being alive is like feeling creating. Like I have a purpose, whether or not that's true. Like I have the full awareness that it's like maybe it's just all a construct for me, but that's fine with me because it's like that's my riding a motorcycle or sure. that's my skydiving. You know what right. I mean? Like it's 100% for me.
So you feel like, so I'm hearing like for you, it's like creating. Because for me, yeah. I feel very much about experience.
Mm, yes.
And it might be for you, it's about creating.
Yes, that's
like
true.
Like purpose to life, yes. like kind of thing.
Yeah, that's for sure you? True.
I don't know. I mean, I guess there's what I want to be the case, and then I think about like the person that I actually have been for like the last 40 years, or, like or the person like that you've been like yeah. like so the idea that it would be a project that you were compelled to complete, I yeah. could see you putting off. The idea that like this is your last day on Earth and Ben needs something edited, I couldn't see you doing it. That's the thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think it's easy to put aside the guilt of not having completed something for ourselves, but yeah. the idea that we're leaving anyone else hanging, I think for all three of us would be like a difficult thing to reconcile.
Well, because also when someone dies, like, it's over for you. What matters right. is the people. Yeah. Like, everybody else keeps living. Yeah.
But I have to believe that giving up a person's last day for yeah. other people can't be healthy. Like, I don't yes. know exactly why, but it feels like it couldn't. So that's what I would wrestle yeah, with yeah. in that moment is like how to have a day that was like, how does it, like, I think as a child of divorce, I've always looked for that way in which I can make both of my parents happy. Mm-hmm. And I think I would probably ruin my last day trying to make yeah. everyone happy. And then realizing as I was going to bed, like, oh, that one thing that I wanted to do today is the one thing that yeah. I forgot to do. So that's my fear yeah. about myself. What I think is interesting is the way that you worded yours, where you talked about that your dad has, you sort of created this dichotomy between like the three books that your dad has written, like, you know, as a professional person, I assume that yeah. they're psych based.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And then all of the letters that he sent to you, it sounds like the description that you gave about the experiences that you're a person who would spend your last day wanting interpersonal stuff, as opposed to this idea of like, you know, some, whether it was like a, something that you constructed that was for 100%. All of people or even for yeah. yourself, you would rather spend the day with, and it sounds like in this case specifically Kaz, mm-hmm. Who is your cosmic ray.
Yeah, I know.
It sounds like you care more about the human relationships. And my fear yeah. is that I will always put that stuff aside to chase this very like intangible, like what could I do to save the world? The reality is I can't save the world, nor has anyone ever asked me to. And it still is my compulsion on a daily basis. Yeah. How can I be more important than anyone is asking or needing me to be?
Interesting.
And I would want to fight that on my last yes. day. But my fear is that I would give in to that thing that I've given to into my entire life, and I would ruin my last day on Earth.
God.
And I think about it all yes. the time. Like, if I knew, I would ruin that day. And so it's so much better that I wake up having no clue what this day expects of me, and then I just go about my day attempting to be a nice enough person and then letting everything else kind of fall into place.
Oh my God. I can relate with that so much, of this fear of this realization that sometimes I just am, and I don't want to say too nice, but like that I give in and take care of other people, and I'm like, why the hell did I do that?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I didn't want to do that, and I wasn't honest.
Right, right.
I like another little story or whatever. I had gotten bit in my lip, so I have this like stitch in my lip still, and this stitch is in
you
here
got
now for
bit
5
in
weeks.
Your lip?
So yeah, so the story and and the, I've got, I mean, not to dramatize the story, but it was a good learning experience for me to sort of look at myself and say, when is it a compulsion for me to sort of take care of somebody else's feelings and then sort of letting myself go by the wayside, like throwing myself in the gutter to take care of somebody who I don't even know care about or isn't, I don't want to say deserving of that, but in that moment isn't deserving of and doesn't need that.
Not from you.
So long story short, I got bit in my lip from a person who was, you know, we were like out and she was drinking and it's, you know, I don't want to talk about it too much just because my friend, it was my friend's friend.
So
it was my friend Jess Heyman's friend. But, so she bit me in the lip by accident, totally by accident. But it was like I put myself in a situation that like I didn't need to be in to sort of make sure she was okay and I wasn't hurting her feelings. And it's like why I have to – it forced me to sort of look at myself and say like when am I doing things – to take care of somebody that I just don't need to do.
Yeah.
And it's a frequent thing.
Yeah.
Like I find that I do that a lot more than I need to. And it's frustrating. And so I agree with you on that. Like I would hate to go out taking care of somebody and not taking care of myself and then lying in bed that night knowing at midnight I'm dead and being like, I did it again.
Yes.
I did that fucking thing again that I told myself I wasn't going to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think when you talk about like when we have that discussion about like dying doing something stupid, I just don't want it to be a mistake that I keep making over and over again.
I just
want to know that I've learned some lessons because otherwise I feel like I deserve to die. Like I don't, you know what I mean? Like I just like that if I can't learn from the mistakes that I make, then eventually that will be my downfall, right? Like
no,
that's
exactly
why they're mistakes. They're called mistakes.
What I meant when I was like, oh, I don't want to die like rushing to somewhere.
Yeah.
Or like I don't want to die doing one of my bad habits.
Right.
Because there is something like.
I don't want
to. Yeah.
I don't want to die. Guys, I changed my mind.
I know.
I thought I did.
I don't want to die either. I like living.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to think it was just like a fear of the unknown. But no, I like. I actually like the like rush of whatever, like the serotonin or whatever, like the endorphins. Like I enjoy the feeling of being alive. Like, and I realize that there are times when I don't allow myself to feel alive out of like fear of the repercussions. But like when I give in, like that notion that like, you know, there's no risk taking without vulnerability. There's no greatness without risk taking. That like I like those moments when I recognize that I am embracing the unknown and then just like getting the rush from it, you know. It's not always going to be a good feeling, but it's always going to be a feeling that I put myself out there. And the older you get, it becomes harder and harder to put yourself out there. Yeah. So when I do, that is when I give myself like the pat on the back. Like, oh, Ben, you didn't have to, you aren't just like an old dog that can't learn new tricks. Like, that's why I would want to do something that I'd never tried before in my life, especially knowing that it can't kill me because I'm going to die at midnight when I lay my head down.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Mm. Oh, the things maybe you were too scared to try because you might die.
Yeah. I'd want a little bit of all of it, you know? I'd want a little bit of the things that I knew I loved. Because like there's certain things in your life, and you like if, we don't often look back on them, or at least with not the correct perspective, but there are things in your life where it was like, huh, I didn't even think twice about that. I must really love this thing because I did not look. I just leaped. I went for it. And good things have come as a result of it.
Yeah.
But in every other way, I'm a cautious person. So why wasn't I in this way?
Yeah.
My instinct knew that this was a thing that I was meant for. And so I would want to find that thing that I was meant for. Sometimes it's going to be like Kaz or Ben, you know, like the idea of like a soulmate. I don't know how you guys feel about that subject, but like the idea that there was somebody, I would want to spend this time with a person that I took a big risk and said, you're the one for me.
Yeah.
And then in other ways, it would just be like, what are some of the things that I was always too afraid to risk? Maybe because I was afraid that they truly were right for me and they took work. Just give it a shot, you know? And then I'd like to fail at a little something. I'd like to, the reminder that I wasn't so perfect, because then I'm going to die in a little bit. And
seems like what you want out of your last day of life is just what you want out of the rest of your life.
Yeah, well, and I also want it to last about 70 to 80 years.
Yeah,
just that one day.
I know.
Yeah. I also, like just, you're describing like
life.
And, well, you're describing like some like really excellent goals for just all of life.
Yeah, which I hope, which I would hope is like what a person ascertains from like their thoughts on death. It's like what's, you know, okay, so this thing that will come for us all, it's not going to come at midnight tonight necessarily. It probably won't come when I lay my head down. It's certainly not going to come when I just decide it to because I'm not going to commit suicide, right? So short of suicide, it's not going to happen when you decide it's going to happen. So
live your whole life as one long last day.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's interesting too when you, like, as you were talking about that, I was thinking, God, I would want to, I'd want to wake up super, super early so that you'd have time to have all that texture of your last day to do those things that really scared you, but then also like eat at your favorite spots.
Yeah.
And it's so funny to think about how many times I sleep in and like just 100%. I'm like, nah, I'm just going to keep sleeping. Right, keep sleeping. And it's like, no, what if I died and I slept in that day, you know?
But okay, let's just play devil's advocate to the, so like, okay, so let's say you love sleeping, right? So what would be early enough to wake up, even though it's your death day, that you would be grouchy the entire day? Like, what's the perfect time for you to wake up?
I would wake up at like 4 a.m. if I knew I was going to die that day.
I would hate to be tired.
I'd be tired and cranky though. I want to split the difference between like 4 in the morning and when I would, what time do you ordinarily wake up?
Like 8:30.
Okay.
8:39.
Yeah, 8:30 I think would be a perfect time to wake up.
I know what you mean. And then staying in bed for I would love to wake up and then like hang out.
No alarm clock. There can't be an alarm clock.
Yeah. I would be like, I'm going to drink coffee all day. Yeah. I love coffee.
Yeah.
And I'm going to, because I feel like that is my energy where I would just be like, all day, like a nut, you know? I wouldn't want to give myself the leisurely time. Like, I feel like I know meditation is so important. And there was a time in my life where I was meditating as much as possible, like, you know, a few times a week. And I really found so many benefits to it. But I do not let myself meditate. It's like, it's such a struggle to do it. And I think it's because I'm so used to like operating on reserve energy that when I go on, to, like when I do yoga, I notice then when I'm tapping into my reserve energy and when I'm just allowing myself to have my normal, regular energy.
Yes.
You know, like today before this, I was like, oh, I'm going to get a coffee. And then I didn't get a coffee. And then I had that really have that moment with myself. Like, you don't need a extra coffee. Like, I already had a cup at home that I made, you know, but I wanted to bring a coffee because there's something so comforting.
I love to have
about an iced coffee, you know, but and that's the thing. I would love to have a coffee all day and I would just be tired, but I'd be like, fuck it. And I'd be okay with it. That's the way I operate. That I wouldn't want to sleep in and I would want to go like, you know, without having a better phrase, balls the wall.
That's, well, I mean, that's great. Then that's like, I like how, like you would want like, the rhythm at which you're most comfortable operating at. That's how you want to spend.
And which I know, because there are times that like, I think I excel on like 6 hours of sleep. But I wake up after having 6 hours pretty awake. But then I'm like, no, I'm just going to keep sleeping. But I could get up and do great on
That's
6 hours.
So maybe then the thing is that it's less about, if you know how many hours of sleep that you need, it's less about what time you're going to wake up. Instead, we'll say that you went to sleep at an early enough time so that you could get up at 4 in the morning and feel rested. So in this case, you went to bed at 10 p.m. You got 6 hours at 4 a.m. You're ready to go.
Yes.
Kaz is pissed. There's going to be terrible lines.
Oh, my God. Humans but in my detritus. Dream, he's happy. He's ready to go. We're having a great time. But in the That's reality, right. he would be like, God.
Well, he would probably be like, this, I'm so sad.
I know. Yeah.
And in the lucid dream, he comes in and shoots you.
I know.
Over breakfast.
Well, so shifting gears a little bit, have you had a lot of health problems? Or like, have you had a lot of like any like crazy, like, because you mentioned when you came in here that you had a lot of like crazy health stories.
Yes. Okay. So since it is October, I got a neck injury when I was working at Not Scary.
Were you a scary person?
I worked at The Hanging, which was their stage combat show for two years.
I've seen that show.
Oh my God. Yes. So it's like a parody on pop culture.
Yes.
And you play like 8 different characters.
Yes.
And you have all these blood packs and you do these, you know, you do these pratfalls and you like do actual like stage combat fighting.
It's like a serious stage show, but it's like outside and it's dark.
Yes, in the middle of the park and it's really fun. And I grew up going to Not Scary Farm, you know, born and raised in Orange County.
Yeah.
Every single year. And oh when God. I was a kid, you know, you would go dressed up with your parents and you would be full in full costume all day and all night. And it was like very much more like a mom and pop situation.
Yeah.
Then I think after they were kind of competing with like, you know, Universal.
Yeah.
They became, so anyways, I started doing that stage combat show, auditioned for it. And I was like, you know, I have a dance background, gymnastics background. So I was like, great. Like I'll just pretend to fight, you know, you know, and I can't believe I actually got it. And I was like, this is awesome. Then the first day of rehearsal, it was like, okay, great. We're gonna practice some falls. So I was thinking we were gonna like pretend to like die and like fall on the ground.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I can't wait. And then we walk up this ladder and it's like, okay, we're gonna teach you how to like basically flip and fall on your back on these gigantic like mats.
Like crash pads? Or
yes,
yeah.
Like many feet. There were some that were like, you know, 50 feet in the air, which I never did those, but I would do like the 20 feeters.
Yeah.
So we were in the last day of rehearsal, the second year I was doing it, or actually it was the first year. I actually went back a year after, the next year. So first year I was doing it, there was this one stunt that we were doing. It was a partnered stunt where I had to do like this front flip, and it was on a very specific count, 1-2 jump.
Yeah.
And the guy, it was the last time we were running it, and we were all tired and dehydrated, and I jumped and he like said wait, so it was 1-2 wait, but I had already jumped and I landed on my neck.
Eek.
And had full body convulsions.
Ooh.
What?
So it was like, you know that grape video of that lady who's like smashing grapes and then she falls and it's like, and she's making all these crazy now and people are laughing at that. I am 100% not laughing.
Yeah. Because
that's what your body does when you have a spinal, when you're like, basically,
you're like a,
almost like a spinal cord injury, but although it's not a spinal cord injury, like your body goes into these convulsions that you are in no control of your body
at that point.
And so I was laying on the ground. The medics come over, you know, Not Scary Farms like opening at this point, like in a week and a half. And the medics were like, what's your name? And I was like, Annie East Fairweather. And they thought that I was like, I must have hurt my brain. Cause they were like, she's speaking gibberish.
Oh no.
And I'm like, that's my name. So I go, they drive me, the paramedics pick me up. They drive me to this one, hospital, you know, I'm laying there with like a neck brace and everything. Yeah. They can't take me in. They can't administer me there because they don't have a neurologist on staff. And they're like, she's going to need spinal cord surgery.
Eek.
So they take me to another hospital. And my mom at this point is called and meets me there.
Yeah.
I'm in the hospital for a few days. They do like every single
for days?
Test. Yeah, for 3 days altogether. On the third day, I was released.
Oh my gosh.
So they're doing tests every day. They're basically hooked me up to an IV. They have no idea that I'm going to need, they don't know if I'm going to need surgery or not. So on the third day, after all these tests, they're like, we're going to do one last MRI and just see. The doctor was like, we're just going to see. And the whole time, he's thinking I'm going to need surgery.
Yeah.
But he's not telling me that. I feel like I'm going to be okay. I'm laying there thinking, like, what kind of jobs I can do acting-wise if, like, you know, this is real and this happens. And
If I'm paralyzed
or whatever, So they
can
they
you
cart
move
me in.
At that point?
Well, I'm still on a neck brace. I still have a neck brace, and I'm still on a board, like strapped to a board.
Oh, so for 3 days they did not unstrap you.
They didn't let me. Like I could lay down, but I couldn't move. Like I could, like you know, I had the IV, so like I was being like all my nutrients were given to me through an IV because I couldn't. They weren't letting me eat because they thought I was going to need surgery. But because I was admitted, like I was brought to the hospital at like, such a weird time of night.
Yeah,
it was like a weird 3 days. It wasn't like a full 3 days.
Yes, yes.
So they brought me into the MRI and like a whole crazy like ghost story type thing happened. But like the door opened and my best friend Catelyn was in the room and she was like, she didn't tell me this. But when we left the MRI, she looked like she had been crying. And I was like, oh, this is probably was like too emotional for her. Experience was like too heavy. And that day the doctor comes in and he's like, I don't know what happened, but he's like, I've never seen this happen before. I cannot explain it medically, but you're okay.
What?
He's like, your spinal cord is completely stable, which it hadn't been the whole time.
What, it hadn't been?
It hadn't been stable the whole time, which is why I was like stuck on the board. And which like it hurt. Like, it, you know, I had like not bed sores, but like bruises.
Yeah.
Because you're like on this hard board constantly for 3 days. And he's like, you know, you have there's a couple discs that are, you know, that were not inflamed, but like... I can't remember what the compacted? Word is. Not compacted, but they like are pushed out of their
dislocated.
Oh. Like kind of like dislocated, but there's another word yeah. for it. But anyways, so but my spinal cord is safe. He's like, just don't get in a car accident. You know those kinds of things.
Normally,
you're
it'd be
okay.
fine to get in a car. Accident.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Normally, you're
yeah.
chill.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But not now. Yeah. He's like, just as long as nothing, you know,
nothing enormous.
Happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And my best friend called me, like, you know, I called her and told her, and she was like crying, and she's like, dude, I swear, like, I saw your dad come into the room. She's like, I didn't see him, but like, I saw something that I knew it was him.
What?
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
So, I mean, like, you know, what people believe, whatever. Like, because when I say it, I feel like I'm just like, oh my God, stupid girl. This basic chick is talking about like how her dad came into the room. But
no.
I just, like, it was like an amazing situation,
yeah.
you know, and then I still opened the show like a week and a half
what?
Later, which everyone was like, you're nuts. But I was like, no, I can do this. And I ended up also getting in a car accident.
Oh, you did?
What? Yes.
That doctor doesn't know shit.
Yeah, I'm fine.
Did you still do the flip in the show?
We changed some of the choreography.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
So I didn't do the flip. And then a lot of my choreography and stunts changed because
okay.
I was doing more like, you know, like back handsprings and all that stuff, which I ended up not doing. And I haven't done stuff like that since.
Annie's, want to play a game?
Yes, I do. Let's play
How natural
a game.
Is that, everyone? great. So what we're going to play today is a little game called Phobia Factor. Basically, it's not like Fear Factor, but because Fear Factor exists and fear and phobia are similar, I named the
phobia
game after
factor.
It. Phobia yeah. Factor. And so what I'm going to do is I'll list one by one a different phobia, and you guys will team up to try to decide what that is an intense fear of.
Oh, I'm great. So excited.
Makes sense?
Great, great, great.
I'm very, very excited because let's see if Dr. Fairweather has any yeah. Can I get that sticky pad?
Yes.
I just want to be able to write them down so we could break down the word.
Great.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
You know?
Wow, you really are
the
a
root
doctor.
Of a word. Yeah. Yeah, so what's your problem, sir?
Yeah. My problem is I am suffering from acerophobia. A-C.
A. Okay, so I'm already writing S first. Okay. A-C-E.
R-O-P.
R-O-P.
H-I-B-I-A. I'm suffering from acerophobia.
Hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Maybe like the fear of going fast, like accelerating.
Oh, like an Acela? I was thinking the Acela train.
Yeah. Okay, if someone said acerophobia, I would say, or it's a fear of like cellophane.
Wait, is that because Sarah sounds like Stella? I like a fear of going fast.
Yeah,
a fear of going fast,
fear of speed, a fear of like, yeah, like a train,
yeah.
Trains, planes, automobiles.
What is Acela? Okay, so Acela is accelerating, but is there any word that has a Sarah in it?
Or even if you were just to think about a few of those letters.
Right, like ace.
Ace.
Ace bandages.
A fear of an ace? A fear of,
of an
fear
ace.
Of the ace.
See, I was thinking
card.
Ace bandages.
I think maybe a fear of ace bandages.
Yeah, right? Okay,
yeah.
I think. Okay, let's. What do you think? Fear of going fast or a fear of
ace
aces? And ace bandages.
Gosh.
I want to say a fear of going fast. I just want to follow instinct.
Follow our gut, yeah.
Yeah, follow
fear
our gut.
Yeah, it's a real blank moment.
Okay. It's like you guys thinking.
But.
So it must be a fear of ace bandages.
Yeah. It's a fear of ace bandages. No, it's a fear of anything sour.
Like acerbic.
Acerbic, exactly. So acerbic, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm. There
so
you
it was
go.
A toughie. It was a toughie.
Dang, that A threw us.
That A really threw it.
Maybe it's like, anyways, like it goes against it. Maybe like the A goes with the phobia. You know what
I
mean?
Well, yeah, I get, because acerbic.
Whatever's in the middle. Oh,
acer, I guess is like, acerbic, something acid,
Well, I should have that. I have acid reflux.
You do?
Yeah.
Me too.
Oh my God, it's so hard.
It's
I don't
you
eat cheese. Do you eat cheese?
I do, and it's
dairy.
Not a good thing.
Yeah, it's a bad
it's
thing.
Bad. Yeah.
When you cut out dairy,
yeah.
then it's like it's basically gone away.
Oh,
yeah.
Ben is so like my Ben is so. so lactose intolerant, and we're so when we didn't realize, like, we sort of been gradually realizing it, and we just had pizza last night, and he even took some Lactaid and was like, "Oops, I feel horrible
today." It's with,
yes,
I feel like
immediately. It's immediate. He feels
because
horrible.
I feel like with the Lactaid, I will be able to get through it, but I don't do it because I get gallstones.
Yeah.
But I'll be able to get through it. But then the next day, it's like a brick because your body can't. Can't break it down.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. It's not worth it. Dairy's bad.
It's bad.
You know, cow milk is basically all pus anyway.
Is that true?
Yes.
It's pus.
It's a lot of it is pus.
Even good cow milk?
Depends on what we're talking. Yeah.
But like, is it supposed to be pus?
No. I mean, no, it's definitely not supposed to be pus, but because of the way that we hook up cows to be constantly lactating on a daily basis, day in and day out.
Udders get pussy?
Their udders get, they get pussy and they get, you know, infections. And then they just put things in the milk so that you can have the pus. And there's there's like a legal amount of pus the FDA will approve.
That's
and dairy.
Disgusting.
Milk and milk, dairy is like the worst thing to put in your body. And I can sit on my high horse because I can't have it.
Yeah,
so I just want everyone to stop eating it so it stops so looking
it's
so
not,
good.
No, I
I
don't
it's
need
actually
a lot
really
of it,
bad.
But I love
it's
it.
A lot of it creates a lot of inflammation too. Okay.
Number two, chirophobia.
Like C-H-I-R-O?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes.
C-H-I or C-H-Y?
C-H-I-R-O phobia.
Well, Cairo is the back.
Like
fear of something coming up behind you?
Ooh, yeah.
Fear of
somebody always on your back?
Yeah. Fear of like, you feel, fear of stuff behind,
yeah, that's
whatever's
what I would
behind
say.
You?
Yeah, I would say that.
It's a good guess. But no.
No!
What?
It sounds so
fear of bones.
Well, chiro, I don't think chiro is actually the back. I think just chiropractics tends to focus on the back.
Fear of skeletons?
Well, hands. Fear of hands. That's what, chirophobia is. Yeah. The origin of the word.
Because a chiropractor works with his hands.
Yeah. Yeah. So chiro is Latin for hands.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Not
is
that.
It?
Yeah. It's on here on this. I'm reading off of this. Chirophobia is the fear of hands. The origin of the word chiro is Greek meaning hand, and phobia is Greek meaning fear. Chirophobia is considered to be a specific phobia, which is discussed on the homepage. It's always important to tell people on Google when something is discussed on the homepage.
I think hands are very creepy.
Yeah.
I feel that I have very creepy hands. I've
got what you're doing right now is a little scary.
I got long, creepy hands.
Do you play the piano?
No, I tried, and I was in lessons for years when I was a kid. And I never practiced, and everybody just cried and cried about it because everybody was like, "You have such good piano fingers."
Yeah, you do.
I never graduated past the little book with pictures in it.
Did you do hand model?
No, because my nails are shit.
Let me see.
I got little meth nails.
Oh, they are tiny for your long fingers.
They're tiny little meth nails. My hands are so bad. They've had to on commercials put nail polish on a wardrobe lady and have her stand in for me.
You're joking.
No, because my hands are huge, and when you have nasty nails, I just look like it just looks like I look like sort of like a creepy mechanic or like a creepy lumberjack. I look like someone who works with their hands but has these creepily delicate fingers. It's
do you
off-putting.
Have extra hinges or whatever
no,
you would
I
call
got,
them?
I got normal amount of hinges, but I got creepy toes too.
Really?
My
long?
Toes are actually creepier. My middle toe is really long, longer than all my other toes.
Really?
Yeah, and
I have Fred Flintstone feet.
Really?
Yeah.
England's better.
Never miss an opportunity to tell me how fat my feet are.
People never miss an opportunity to tell me how big my feet are and how spindly and creepy my toes are. They look like weird long hands.
Do
it's
you
disgusting.
Wear sandals ever?
Yeah, because I don't care. Yeah. It's just my feet. Yeah.
I'm glad that you don't. Yeah. Shame is a problem.
Yes.
Guilt and shame.
Yes, guilt and shame big time.
Us.
Yeah.
Consecutolophobia.
Easy. Fear of combs.
Consecutaleophobia. Consecutaleophobia. This is a very tough one.
Consecutaleophobia.
Oh my God.
Consecutalia. Something about consecutive, something about.
Yeah.
Things in a sequence?
Things in a sequence or an
fear
order.
Fear of Russian dolls?
Fear of order.
Fear of order. Oh, yeah.
You know. You have fear of Russian dolls? Is that what you said?
Yeah, because they come out.
They're terrifying. The Russian dolls. Yeah, like the wooden dolls. Yeah. We're just going to go with that.
You're going to go with fear
because
of Russian dolls.
Because I feel like I'm a little bit disappointed still about the first one. Yeah. Like, I feel let down about the. Yeah. See how I haven't written anything down?
Yeah,
that?
I gave up immediately
because I was pissed it wasn't about fear of
Secretaliaphobia.
We can make it about that.
Yeah, fear of sequence.
Fear of sequence.
Sequence.
It's a good guess. The actual answer is a fear of chopsticks.
What?
Wow.
Chopsticks. Yeah.
A fear of chopsticks.
They should just like change that to like the Bob, where it's just like every dude with named Bob probably has a hard time with chopsticks.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Who's like, oh,
just
I'm
like
scared of him.
An average white dude who enters a sushi place and it's just like, I'm fucked.
Yeah. That basically is it. They think it's like sort of, it's part of a fear of Chinese culture in general.
Oh.
So yeah, I think it is just sort of a it's a component of white racism, largely.
Yeah. Mm, yeah. I love eating everything with chopsticks.
Me too.
Cause really when I eat most things with chopsticks,
really?
It slows you down.
Yeah, that's
then
good,
when
yeah.
I eat with a fork or a spoon, like I can only, it feels crazy to me.
You're like,
I'm like, this is too much in my mouth at one time.
Yeah.
It's aggressive.
What's the craziest thing you've eaten with chopsticks? Did you eat cereal?
No.
That'd be crazy.
Well, see, Cause and I make a lot of like scrambles.
Oh, yeah,
not really
yeah.
necessarily eggs. I've been kind of over eggs lately.
Yeah, but a lot of people are, I feel like.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I think maybe what the health.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Since that came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've been looking at meat products a little bit differently, but I love meat.
Yeah.
But eggs suddenly have gotten creepy to me. And I used to eat eggs every day.
Yeah.
But I love making, like, we like to make, like, rice or quinoa. And, like, we just throw basically everything in a pan. So just the easiest, like, one step above college eating is how we eat, you know?
I love, and so I like to
eat that with chopsticks because... Yeah. It does slow you down. You get to enjoy the food longer.
So kind of like a stir fry? Like you just turn everything into stir fry? Yeah. No, that's what I do too. I mean, I think that's I think that's how one transitions from college eating into adult eating.
You just call it a stir fry.
Yeah, yeah. There's more vegetables than there were previously. Yeah. There's a little bit of chicken. There's a bunch of various pepper family kinds of things. Yeah. Some rice. That's a stir fry.
And you could throw any sort of sauce on that and be happy. You can throw hot sauce. You could throw teriyaki sauce.
And
favorite green Tabasco is my favorite.
Oh, really? She'd like it hot.
Oh my God. It's just so good. There's like a weird flavor. It's almost vinegary.
Mm.
Has that like vinegary flavor, but it scratches an itch I can't explain.
You know, I just got some rice vinegar. And I fucking love it.
Ooh.
I'll put it on anything. I love vinegar. I love vinegar.
I do too. Cause like loves vinegar too. Mm. He'll make like a huge apple cider vinegar drink, and it is a little disgusting to me. Like, cause he'll just make it for like dinner, and I'm like, that's something that you should only have in the morning.
Yeah,
like, that's gross.
Yeah.
So you must love those like kombuchas and stuff.
Yeah, I love them. Mm. I love them because I love vinegar.
That's good for you.
I just, it's so.
Those are good for
you. I love sour things. Like, well, no, I don't love sour things. I love specifically vinegary things.
You don't have xerophobia.
I don't have xerophobia anymore.
No, let's let lovely Anna East plug all the things that she's got going on in her life.
I mean, God, really, you really up top. I mean, you nailed it. I'm so impressed.
Thank you.
I mean, I guess the only thing I could say is that with the DC Superhero Girls, a Lego movie came out not too long ago, so you could purchase the Lego movie if you have like a niece or a nephew.
Are you in the Lego
and you
want
to have like a female empowerment. Well, there's so many. So now basically they're making everything a Lego movie.
Oh, so there's a Lego version of DC Superhero Girls. Oh,
yes.
Cool. Very cool.
So, I mean, it's really fun. It's funny. And it's just, if you have, you know, children in your life who you're like, you know, I want them to feel special.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or to find a, you know, see themselves in somebody else, you know. So, anyways, that you can buy. Target has a bunch of those things. And then, every first Friday and second Wednesday, new show and characters welcome.
Which one's new show is the first?
The first Friday of every month, and then second Wednesday of every month is characters welcome. Yeah.
Okay. Not sure when this episode will be out, but check the UCB calendar.
Yeah.
You can also type Annie's Fairweather into the UCB talent page. You can find it everywhere.
Oh, yes.
You can find her. Do you want to tell the lovely listeners where they can find lovely Annie's on social media?
Oh, well, just so simple. I didn't know people were doing cool names. So my Instagram is just Annie's Fairweather.
Right.
And then my Twitter, which I never tweet, but it's Annie's Amie, A-I-M-E-E, which is my middle name.
Oh.
But I'm going to change my last name to McCray, and then Fairweather will scoot up to my middle name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, this was so fun, you guys.
It was so fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much.
You got to come back.
This was so fun. I would love to come back and talk about death more.
Definitely. So please do. Please do.
Hey, guys. We got another listener call in. This is a great story from Jason, and it's got one of the best injury inspirations, the Karate Kid. Take it away, Jason.
Hey, my name is Jason Parker, and I'm a student and performer over at UCB, and saw the post on Facebook and was just calling to leave a quick story. I, as long as I can remember, have always tended to be more of a sickly person. A lot of it, I believe, is mental. It's kind of embarrassing to go ahead and admit that, but I guess I will. One of the stories of many that I have, just the one sprang to mind. Anyways, I was 13, had a big fascination for karate and all things martial arts. And on this particular night, it was a school night, I was watching The Karate Kid, the original, of course. And, my mom kept asking me to go to bed. Yeah, just a minute, Mom. It's almost done. And of course it was up to the climactic scene. Having trouble speaking. It was the end scene, and, Ralph Macchio is of course doing his famous crane technique. And for whatever reason, I decided that I would also do it with him, almost like I was partaking in the fun. And, of course, I got a bandana and tied it around my head. I have my leg up. My mom is telling me to go to bed. Yeah, just a moment, Mom. And then I go to do the kick, just like he does it in the finale, and trip my own legs in midair and then fall on my foot and end up breaking my foot. And then have to, while crying, scream for my mom, have her come in, and then have her take me to the hospital at around 10 o'clock at night, and then have to wear a special shoe and crutches. And, of course, I, because I cared about being cool, just told my friends that my mom was chasing me and pushed me down and broke my foot. But again, that was all within the span of maybe 12 months where I broke, three different bones, three different incidents. None of them are ever worth bragging about. And also, endured a lot of different illnesses that probably could be traced to something in my head. Anyways, I hope that story helps, and, Godspeed in what you're doing. Thank you.
Jason, thank you so much for that cringeworthy story. That was great. And I really love the part about being cool because, I mean, man, at that age, all you ever want is to be cool. Guys, please call us, share with us. Oh, geez. Call us. Tell us your definitely dying stories. 323-388-3879. And you know what, Zig? You can keep that flub in because everybody's got to know I'm human, right? This has been Definitely Dying. Thank you guys so much for listening.
You can follow us on Twitter at Definitely Dying. And until next time, stay healthy.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.